Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor-rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials, order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello! Welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's September the 1st, 2023, and this is episode number one. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the debut of the Tesla Model 3 Project Highland Refresh, Kyle's visit to the Rivian factory and driving a dual motor truck, and the debuts of the Mini Cooper and Countryman EVs, and much, much more. I'm Dominic Yoni, host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. Joining us today is the freshly recharged Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. And of course, we also have Kyle Connor, who joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. So hi there, everybody.
Morning.
Good to see you guys.
Good to see you all.
So almost Tom, all.
Almost all right. So Tom, you're back in New Jersey, all refreshed and recharged from your vacation. Kyle, you're in Europe driving cool cars that we don't get here. And they're using chargers that mostly work. And let's see. And I'm in Tallahassee, Florida, which just dodged a hurricane at the last minute and did not get destroyed on Wednesday. And Martin? Well, Martin, he would be with us today, but his family is in the midst of an awesome change that he's going to tell you about. And we have a little video to show you if I can just dig it up here real quick. And because, of course, he is not here. He does this here, so it's a little less clunky when he's here.
Testing. Is this working? I hope so. Hello, gentlemen. Hello, everyone watching and listening. Show one is exciting, right? And hopefully the gang are back in the treehouse and we're all hanging out together again, except I'm going to be missing. But I've got a really good excuse, and hopefully you understand why I've not been able to be around for not only on my podcast, EV News Daily, for a little bit, but also on this show, both since we left our old home. And here we go with the launch of a brand new adventure. Dom and Tom and Kyle done an amazing job getting Batteries Included set up. And I was absolutely delighted that here we go, beginning of September, show one. I thought we'd be off to the races, but I can't be here. And let me tell you why. So, some backstory. My wife and I feel really strongly about adoption. It's something that we feel that if it's appealing to you and you can, it's something that you should look at. It's definitely not for everybody. We're both 45 years old now, and if we didn't do it now, we would never do it. I'm already going to be the granddad at the school gates come graduation in 15 or 16 years' time. But either way, we've been going through the process this year. Earlier this year, we got matched with a baby, and I won't give you any more details than that, because as you can imagine, babies like this don't tend to end up in the system, if you want to call it that, or being removed from their parents because they were in a warm, loving, non-violent home. Now, some kids end up in adoption because the kids are, you know, the parents are, kids are 16, 17 years old or whatever, and they decide that, hey, we just can't do this. It's all very amicable. You find parents and you know each other and all those kind of things. That's not the case with us. And we're going to have our hands full with this child because of what they've been through. But we didn't think it would happen now. We thought that perhaps there'd be a little more time for me to jump on the podcast and hang out with you guys for a bit until it would all happen. But the timeline has changed a little bit to what we expected. And so I can't be here because we are welcoming a fourth member of our family. And there's a lot to think about. There is the new child who we're bringing into our life. There's my five-year-old son who has coped so well with being told, hey, by the way, three are going to become four, but not in a way that you might be used to, or your friends and family and cousins, and, you know, a baby ends up in mummy's tummy, and kids have got, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 months to get used to the idea. So he has coped just incredibly well. My wife is the most amazing human being for what she's done this year to prepare our family. I've just kind of milled around a little bit and put some new curtains up and painted a spare room. That's all I've done, really. But it's happening now, and it's happening this week, and you'll understand why I simply cannot be anywhere else apart from with my family on hand, being dad, and hopefully settling a little baby into a new life. It's going to be, even though babies are resilient and they get moved, and we know we're learning a lot about this process, it must still be enormously confusing to be looked after by a different set of faces. This baby's already been through a lot already and moved between places, and so we just can't wait to provide a stable, warm, loving family. And that's where I am. So I'm so sorry. I'm not here for show one. I'd love to be. But hopefully I got a good excuse. Hey guys, have a brilliant first show of Batteries Included. If you're watching this or listening to this, I hope that you continue to support the guys doing what they are doing here. Even supporting the old place that we were at. They've recast their podcast and doing a fantastic job with it as well. There's room for plenty of EV podcasts and YouTube channels out there. So I hope you enjoy that. And I can't wait to be back soon and telling you, hopefully, if you're interested, you might not be, about the process that we've been through and getting back to talking about electric cars every week, every day as well on EV News Daily. Hey, thank you for your time. I'll see you soon.
So that's the word from Martin. That's awesome, right?
Absolutely. Fantastic thing for him and his family to be going through. And we certainly understand, as psyched as we all were to have today, everybody, you know, back in the treehouse, as he said, and that was the plan. This all happened really recently. And just, you know, a week or so ago, he said, guys, this next Friday, you know, and he even offered, he said, I can probably swing it, but it's going to be terribly difficult on the family. And we were just like, no, you take care of what you have to take care of. And I'm sure all the followers are going to understand.
Yeah, that's cool. And hopefully I can't wait. He'll be back next week. Yeah. Cause I miss, you know, being on the screen with him and having him in the studio before and after the show.
Miss him handling all the behind the scenes stuff. So that's what you miss.
Oh, that too. That's definitely true. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is our official launch, episode. We'll continue doing our usual Friday show, of course, but we're also going to be doing some interview episodes earlier in the week, starting, I believe, next week. And who knows, maybe we'll do some occasional pop-up shows when some like really big news breaks, or some maybe deep dives into technology. We're still trying to figure this out exactly, but yeah, more and more episodes coming to you soon. So I'm dying to talk about what we've been driving this week, but I think we need to kick this show off with some big Tesla news. Yeah, I got some agreement. Yeah, okay. So yesterday evening, the Tesla Model 3 refresh, going by the code name Project Highland, made its official debut in China and Europe, at least. So some European media outlets also got to see the car and make some videos. So this is a mid-cycle refresh. And actually, I have a have a page I can show you here. How we do this? We do this and then this model three. Right. So this is what some, this is what some websites, Tesla websites look like around the world. They have this new Model 3 footage playing in the background there. So you can check that out. So, right. So this is a mid-cycle refresh. So it seems like much of the car, like the chassis and powertrain, is basically the same. There was speculation that this car will have large cast pieces like the Model Y now, but we haven't seen confirmation of that yet. So let's just take a look at what we do know has changed. And there's quite a bit even, you know, considering. So the front fascia and rear design are a bit more different and aerodynamic. The headlights and taillights have changed. The coefficient, it's a lot more aerodynamic. So the coefficient is now 0.219. That's improved from 225. This gives the car more range. So we don't have EPA numbers yet, but WLTP range is given as 346 miles for the rear-wheel drive version and 423 miles for the long-range dual-motor versions. I suspect those will come down when we see the EPA versions of those numbers. So now the front suspension has new springs and dampers. The geometry has changed. The way the subframes mount to the chassis has changed. There's more bonding points, I guess. And the bushings have been upgraded. See, there are new designs for the wheels, both 18 and 19 inch wheels. It's got two new colors, ultra red, stealth gray. The interior has been upgraded, so it looks nicer. And supposedly the materials are quite nice with the actual aluminum and nicer materials. It's quieter. It's got more sound insulation and acoustic glass has been extended to the rear passenger windows as well as the rear roof glass. The big center screen, it's the same size, slightly smaller bezel, so it's slightly more room. I think it's like 15.4 inches now. The stocks, like the turn signal stocks and all that, there's no turn signal stocks. This is now like the new Model S. So your turn signal indicators have been moved to the steering wheel. The horn, though, is in the same place. You know, I think on your car, Kyle, the horn has got a little button on the wheel, or did?
So that's just something that the CarWow video shared. The previous Model 3 has the horn just like your car, Dominic.
Right.
But just right. That Model S has the button.
Right. So a lot of people were complaining about having the button on the steering wheel like that, this little thing. They hit it by mistake sometimes, especially on the yoke. But with the Model 3, it's just going to be boom like normal and horn sounds, and that's all great. All right. What else do we have? So the car now has, as you can see in these pictures rolling by, ambient lighting. So that'll change, and it's all around the car. It's kind of nice. It's very up to date now. I think that's a lot of new EVs or a lot of cars in general, you know, have come with ambient lighting. So they're up to speed there. The seats are now perforated, with the front seats getting ventilation. So yes, that's great. There's an 8-inch screen in the rear seats with access to climate and entertainments like YouTube and Netflix. The speakers, the stereo system has been upgraded quite a bit. See, I think there's like two subwoofers now and a couple amplifiers. The long range gets like 17 speakers, two subwoofers and two amplifiers. The rear wheel drive speakers only get like nine speakers, one amplifier, no sub. Yeah. And there's no word on US pricing yet, but I think we have some pricing for Europe on the site. First deliveries happen in Europe in October, and that's about it. So, Kyle, what are your first impressions of this thing?
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to be filming it here pretty soon, so very much looking forward to that. And I'll do a full, you know, nerd video. I'm just noticing watching this footage, it seems like they removed the center heated seat for the back. But everything else looks to be slightly improved. I guess I'll start negative because most of my feelings are quite positive on this. Okay. No fog lights, perhaps quite concerning up front because I always drive with the fog lights on. I own a current generation Model 3, or I guess, you know, whatever the last one was, the old Model 3 now. And I love having the fog lights. I also love the stocks with my Model 3 because in my Model S, it's not like it's the end of the world. The car automatically chooses the direction you want to go. But it's just like something else to think about and look and process versus just getting in the Model 3 and smacking the shifter into drive and hitting the throttle. And I can get in that car into drive and go right away, which, for example, the Model S, I have to have the seatbelt on and all these things for it to actually engage into drive. And that's how you should drive a car. But we don't drive, you know, like humans don't operate perfectly. And so sometimes I'm like driving, pulling out of the driveway and buckling the seatbelt in the Model 3, and I'm stuck in the S. Now, of course, you can swipe up on the screen. I imagine that will be the same. And but that's just a weird, awkward reach to do that. Okay, so those are minor complaints. Who cares? Let's talk mechanical differences between old and new generation. The same exact motors as the current Model 3 and the same battery packs as the current Model 3. So you have, what is that, you know, 60-ish kilowatt hour usable, mid 60 kilowatt hour LFP, close to high 70 kilowatt hours, something like that. And NCF chemistry, I think 84 gross, maybe 81 right. usable. 80,
yeah, actually I have the number somewhere at 82.4, something okay. 0.4. So anyway,
low,
whatever.
Low 80, you know, usable capacity, 250 kilowatt charging on the big battery pack, an okay charging curve, totally livable. The car is a great, it is the new gold standard. The Model 3 has been the gold standard in the segment, and this just improves it. The standard LFP retains the same exact driveline. Again, 170 kilowatt charging, but a fantastic curve, especially for top charging. LFP just rockets up there. You can full charge it all the time. My recommendation is for everyone who doesn't need all-wheel drive, just get the standard car. It seems great. And that's been my recommendation. My dad and I made a video. He owns an LFP Model 3. And we were just like, this is kind of the perfect car when you factor in price. Like, there's nothing that can come close. So that's great. Interior changes look really nice. The seats look great. The perforated material with ventilated seats will be very welcome. Although I will say, if it's the same material that's in my Model S, which I imagine it would be, it doesn't wear as well as the original Model 3 white seats. I have white seats in both, and my Model S, which I only have, I don't know, 12,000 miles on it, something like that, 15,000 miles. Actually, the interior looks worse than my almost 140,000 mile Model 3 white interior. And I think a lot of that's just due to the thinner material that they're using on the white seats. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. New wheels as well, looking great. Design space-wise, it's all going to be pretty much the same. You know, overall, it's just all these little optimizations. Can't wait to hear the sound system. Can't wait to experience this new interior layout. This new center console looks great. Ambient lighting, sure, it's still very tame compared to what others are doing out there, but it does seem to be color selectable, which is great. That rear screen in the back will make all the difference for rear seat passengers. That's great. It's there's really nothing to complain about here. It just is like, if you're going to get a Model 3, just wait for this, is my recommendation, because they've really discounted the U.S. inventory cars right now. And it sounds like the U.S. will not get this car until next year. I think it's going to launch in Europe first, is my understanding. So
yes, it launches in October, I believe.
Right. And they had some YouTubers and media go film it in Oslo recently, but it'll also be here in Munich. And so there might be a million people around it, but I'm going to get a video in with it. You know, to be totally transparent, I did reach out to Tesla, and, you know, sometimes they communicate, sometimes they don't. Here in Germany, they actually do have like a press department, though. So I reached out to the dude there and I was like, hey, we want to film it. Haven't heard back. But you know, at least I'm doing whatever I can to get it on our channel.
So Tom, what are your thoughts like right off?
So
you used to own one, right?
Yeah, I own two Model 3s.
Oh, right.
Outstanding vehicle. This makes it even better. Overall, super impressed with the changes. I think they made some really nice changes. Don't like the removal of the stalks. I agree with Kyle on that. That would bother me. I've driven Model S enough without them to know that I don't like it. Would I get used to it? Yeah, I'd get used to it for sure. But, you know, if I ate dog poop every day for 6 months, I'd probably get used to that too. So, you know, it doesn't mean it's better because you get used to it. But I like the rear screen for the rear passengers. I like the new front, almost like a chiseled look. The front fascia looks a lot nicer, in my opinion, than the previous version. I think they did a nice job with the improvements without tweaking too much. They kind of, you know, gave us a nice refresh on the Model 3. And the range is you know, we're talking 12 to 13% more WLTP rated range. I think it, when the long range went from, was it 374 to the, from the current version to like 421. So that's about 13% more. It won't be that high when we get EPA range rated. I think the highest EPA range rated three now is what, 333, Kyle? I think the long range is 333. So if it retains that same 12 to 13% increase, we're looking at, you know, 370, 375, which is fantastic. You know, I mean, you know, nothing else touches that in this class. And as Kyle said, it's, you know, it was before, but this, you know, solidified its position as the benchmark in that class. You know, and Tesla's super aggressive with their pricing. We don't know the pricing on this new model, but they've been very aggressive. I'd imagine when it first comes out, there's not going to be any sweetheart deals, you know, but, and there shouldn't be, because it's going to be in high demand. Everyone's going to want the new one. But if you wait a little bit, you know, as Tesla does, you'll probably be able to nab one for a pretty good price. I mean, the inventory cars that are now, I think we're probably going to talk more about that later, are ridiculous deals here. I mean, I can get a rear wheel drive Model 3 now with the federal tax credit and the New Jersey state rebate for $25,000 here in New Jersey.
And it's actually $21,000 in Colorado, I heard from someone. But that might include the fuel savings thing, which is kind of dumb.
Yeah, you can't factor it in. God, I hate that they do that.
So annoying. So excited. I clicked on it. I thought they had changed that. And I clicked on the site the other day and I saw the ridiculously low price and got so excited. And then, right.
They don't need to do
3 years of gas savings. Come on, guys.
You really don't need to do that. Yeah. You know, and it's misleading for someone that isn't really well familiar with the site like we are, where we easily, we just eliminate that. You know, that's the first thing you view, you know, and it's like, oh, wow, it's that cheap. Oh, no, wait a minute. You know, it's with fuel savings. And they can't even make that assumption because the cost of electricity is different around the country. And, you know, if you're living in an area that has very high electric rates, and there's some areas in the country, your electric rates have been going up a lot the last few years. And there's some areas where they're paying a lot where there's not much savings. So that's right. False advertising. I don't like that Tesla does that.
Right. Yeah. Down here, it's like 12 cents. So it's still pretty cheap. But yeah, up where you are, not so cheap.
It's not too bad in New Jersey, but go a little bit north of New Jersey, like Connecticut and Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And it's like 30 something cents. You know, it's like double what I pay 80 miles away.
Yeah. So there's no mention of Model 3 performance, which I think is really interesting. So, So we don't know what they're doing with the performance. I heard maybe from a couple creators who also filmed there. There's a YouTube channel that I follow that I love called Autotop NL. He mentioned like maybe Model 3 Plaid, which would be amazing. And so if that happens, like I'm in, that's amazing. So cool stuff all going on with Tesla this week. I actually really liked their communication with everything. I think it's great that they've chosen a few select YouTubers and you know, media to share the story, because that, you know, these are people that are asking questions beyond just what's shown in a press release, which they don't even typically do press releases.
Right. So I did this time. There is a press release. Like Martin emailed me an actual press release from Tesla.
Tesla Europe will do these things.
Right.
And so I think this is really a good direction. I don't necessarily think they need like a traditional press department, but I like for launches getting more people involved at least. Yeah. And, you know, they've done so much beyond just Model 3 as well. But of course, we're going to do all the videos, the comparisons. As soon as we can get one in the US, we'll get our hands on one. We'll do the you know, back to back testing left and right so we can, you know, basically leave no stone unturned. Can't wait. And again, I can't wait to see the car just tomorrow or the next day. Should be great.
All right. Yeah, and you're saying you're going to see the car tomorrow or the next day because you're in Germany right now, in Munich? No, Berlin. Where are you?
Yeah, in Munich right now.
Okay.
And I was in Berlin yesterday.
All right. Right. Okay. Right. And we'll talk about that in a moment too, because that was hilarious. So is the auto show happening now, the IAA, or is that next week?
I think it starts Monday.
Okay, starts Monday. And that's where you expect to see the new Highland Model 3?
It'll be on display, public display here.
Right on. Yeah. All right. So I was looking at it and I agree with some of the comments I've seen. It's not like a huge difference, I think, on the front. And I, th- I'm not sure that I like it more though. Exactly. I like some things about it, but I don't like that. Like you said, you don't have the fog lights. I drive with my fog lights on all the time as well, just to be more visible. And that's something I like. And also there's also that air curtain that comes from through the front over the front wheels, that's gone. So I don't know if that actually had any cooling effect for like for the brakes or no. Okay. But you know, that's gone. So it's like a sealed, basically, yeah, it's just like a plain front end with a lot less like surface detail, I guess, on the front and more like aggressive looking, you know, crisper headlight assembly there. It's okay. I really like the interior changes though, but they did, you know, it does seem like they're still missing some things. Like I didn't see any mention of like a massaging seat option, which.
Yeah. It's the Model 3. It's like a base car because S and X don't even have massaging seats. That's where it's missing.
Volkswagen ID3.
Yeah. But you got to spec it. Like here, we have an ID3 on test this week that has massaging seats, but like, you know, it's like expensive.
Sure.
But that increases complexity. The cool thing with Model 3, and I think like we can all appreciate a little bit of its simplicity, is it's just like a reasonable car that holds its value really well that anyone can use. And there's no frills. Like it's like the base, the most minimum amount of stuff that you need to be comfortable and not complain, but it's not here to wow you. It's not, you know, it's not like a Mercedes EQS on the inside or anything crazy. Yeah, I mean, I think the Model 3 is like everyone should just have one in the garage if you can afford to, because I'm lucky enough to have one when friends come into town. It's what they borrow. For example, our dog sitter's driving it for, you know, the whole time we're gone here in Germany. And it's just a car that's reliable. It's dependable. It's easy to drive, does everything you need it to do. And this will be the same.
Wait a sec. Dog sitter. You know, I'm in need of a job. I love dogs.
Just I don't know. Handle these. These are some crazy dogs.
Right.
We got three big ones.
Right. Yeah. And any excuse to come up to Colorado is great. And I was thinking actually coming up to see you in October. I'm not sure if that's going to work out for sure, but that's kind of like in my general plan. It's sort of what I'm going to do. Yeah. So that's yes. But I'm really pretty excited about the interior of this car. And I, like you say, I have one in my garage too at the moment. I bought used, and in the used market, it should be pretty decent now. This should be really interesting to see how this new model coming in affects that market. I expect that there might be more affordable used Model 3s out there at some point. And I mean, if with luck, they can hit the $25,000 mark, and then you get that $4,000 rebate kicks in, or tax credit kicks in. So that's going to be pretty handy for a lot of people. Last week, we talked about a lot of expensive electric vehicles that are just out of everybody's reach, really. Use Model 3, it's really in the ballpark for a huge number of people now.
Yeah, that's going to be the jam. We'll see what happens. I mean, these things just seem to hold their value so well. My dad was actually looking last night, and he's like, they're giving him so much money for his current Model 3. He, you know, they dropped the Model X prices like crazy. He's like, oh, maybe that's the way to go. So, you know, we'll talk about that later in the show. But they still seem to be holding strong. There's no mention of when Highland will come to the U.S. Or if we're just going to start calling it the refresh Model 3, which I think everyone will transition at some point soon. But I think they've nailed it. They did all the right updates. They kept it simple. The pricing, Tom, you mentioned, hasn't been announced yet in our market, but in China and I believe in Europe it has been. And it's very similar to the outgoing model. So that's all good news from my side.
So I'm just looking at the US Tesla website at the moment and purchase price. Yeah, here it still says like $40,240 for the rear-wheel drive, which is a bit down. Oh, you guys were saying this morning that and I had missed this somehow, that Tesla has slashed a bunch of prices again. So, Tom, do you have any info on that off the top of your head?
Only the high level info. I didn't read the whole articles, but there seems to be they slashed prices across the board on everything. And in the Model 3s, I was looking recently or just this morning about the inventory Model 3s in the area are fantastic deals. I didn't see if it was any better on the custom orders. I'm not sure. Kyle might have a little bit more information on if I don't know, Kyle, it's just the inventory Model 3s that have the great prices, right? Or no, you can order it too.
It's all across the board and they're huge cuts. Here, I'll walk you through them if you'd like. Dom, do you think I should just take everyone through them real quick?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so if you were to buy a normal long-range Model S yesterday, you would have paid $88,500 for that car. Today, that car is $75,000 or $76,000 roughly. So a huge cut on the base Model S. Even crazier is the Model S Plaid was $108,490. So $108,500. That's what it was. Now it's $90,000.
Jeez.
So huge cut there.
Oh man.
Even crazier than that is a Model X Plaid is $90,000. So you can get S or X Plaid both for $90,000, which is just, that's the most insane performance, power, all of these things that you can get, really acceleration for the money. I think that might just take the cake, especially when you compare similar results to other, you know, high-end electric vehicles, Taycan, Lucid, Sapphire, that certainly those vehicles do other things better than this. But like, oh my goodness, this is crazy good value. And the Model X was dropped significantly, almost $20,000, the standard version, from about $100,000 down to $80,000.
Right, $79,990. Those are some crazy prices, man. How are people going to compete?
Well, that's their problem to keep up with. I don't know. It seems really good. Now, I own a Model S Plaid, so internally I'm crying deeply because I also bought it when it was the most expensive. A really dumb move. But hey, we've made some fun videos with it. And interestingly as well, the other big news that I never thought would happen is they made FSD cheaper.
Oh, right. That's kind of crazy. I'm not sure if I like that idea personally, because I have my used Model 3 that came with FSD. Is it like kind of holds up its value or helps hold up its, you know, trade value if I want to trade it at some point? But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I think in the used market, like when you were getting your car, I think it was valued somewhere around $3,000 roughly is what we saw this spread. If you took two equal cars, $3,000 would be what FSD would bring more. This isn't going to really affect the used value at all. However, I think we could all agree $15,000 was a crazy expensive price for what you get today. Now, Tesla has promised over and over things are going to get better. That's going to do more. We've covered those situations. But if you buy a car for today, which I always recommend to people, which is don't plan on it getting better. What functionality can it do today? You can always buy another car later. I still think $12,000 is too expensive for FSD beta. To me, it's like, and again, to every person, it's a different value. And we could all throw out what we think it would be worth to us. But either way, beyond the numbers, it's so interesting that they went cheaper. Never thought we'd see the day. Never thought that would happen. That's crazy.
Well, Elon's always just said it's only going to get more expensive.
Yeah, you know, right.
It's not going to get less expensive. And I agree with Kyle 100%. Even at $12,000, it's way, way overpriced. Honestly, as he also said, you know, it's worth to you what it's worth to you. And everybody might have a different point. My point on full self-driving would be about $3,500. That's it. I would not pay a penny more than that in its current state. If I could hop in the vehicle, close my eyes and say, take me to my parents' house and nap, then the $10,000 to $12,000 price range, I think is probably worth it. But guys, we're not going to get there for a long time. I don't care that there's been promising the end of the year, for freaking 7 years now. It ain't happening. You're not going to get in your car, your Tesla, and say, take me here and pick up a newspaper and start reading for years. Right. And it's just not worth dumping the money into it now, in my opinion. No way.
But it's sort of funny that Elon did a little demonstration drive of the next version of FSD beta, version 12, I guess, the big update. Right now we have a, like 11 point whatever. It's in the 11s. And so this is like a kind of new logic and new things. Instructions aren't explicitly in the code. It just sort of figures it all out. And it tried to run a red light. So this is like the version he had said again, and he said this many times that, you know, it'll be finished. It'll be ready. It'll be self-driving for reals by the end of this year. for September, and that's his demonstration of it. It's not ready for reals. You know, you can't do that. It's not ready.
I haven't watched the drive, but it did look interesting. Like, I think to paint a fair picture, sure. It's not running every red light. You know, like,
right. No.
It can still mess up, of course, right. And you still need a human driver. But it looks like it actually, just based off of talking to some of my friends who are like both FSD haters and lovers, uh-huh. Like they both came to the same conclusion that it's like fundamentally different than what we've experienced so far. For example, pulling into the shoulder when you come to a stop. And, you know, I've always tried to take like a fairly agnostic view to all of this FSD stuff because everyone's got their claims. I have it on my car. Personally, I don't use it. And mostly because it's the eye tracking thing. It dings at me every time I look away. And it's like, I don't, you know, that I get it, but basic autopilot doesn't do that. So I use basic autopilot a lot more for long trips and stuff. Yeah. So anyway, new changes and cheaper price beyond the technology. Maybe it's a sign of Tesla showing, okay, maybe we've got this slightly too aggressive or slightly too optimistic about the state of FSD. And I also think too many people were renting it or buying it monthly because that is, you know, you'd have to have the car for years for you to make up to 15 grand. And because it's not transferable, like, you know, most people switch their car every 2 or 3 years. It's way cheaper just to do it monthly.
Yeah. So just back up, and a lot of people were saying earlier, besides that, it was like that was the one mistake, you know, tried to run the red light. But that's all you need is like one mistake to, you know, to really ruin someone's life or day or whatever. But it did, you know, I will admit, it did look like the rest of it was really good. I mean, in my car, when I run an FSD, it mostly does really good, but then there's, you know, situations where it does not and where you need someone behind the wheel. Anyway, it's like an ongoing thing and an improvement. And I expect I really think that they will get there eventually. I'm not sure when that's going to be, you know, when will they accept, what's that word? Like the Mercedes has the ADAS system, but it's true level 4, where they
only, and I think it's level 3, but it's when the automaker is it 4?
Yep.
It's when the automaker accepts responsibility in an accident, and I'm fairly certain it's 3.
It's 4, and then level 5 is like that with no steering wheel, basically. Like the level 4 is
Mercedes has level 4. They have level 3.
Okay, yeah, well, I mean, I could double check that.
It's only in Nevada, but I'm fairly certain it's
California too.
Level 3. No, I think it's only Nevada highways that it's approved for.
Okay, I mean, well, I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure because I rode it in Los Angeles, in LA.
And right,
they were getting the approval for that later that year. So I think
let's look it up right now so we don't confuse our audience. I'll do a little bit of research and then you guys keep talking.
All right. So, Tom, let's talk about what you were doing. Besides, let's move away from Tesla stuff for a second, and let's talk Cadillac. So you did an interesting little drive this week, a video this week. So previously you had done a 70-mile-an-hour range test in the Cadillac Lyric, and you did it again just recently, but instead of driving at 70 miles an hour, you drove at 80 miles an hour. Yeah. So how did that go?
Yeah. So I did the 70 mile an hour highway range test, the standard test that Kyle and I do. And, you know, quite honestly, and, you know, I might be a bit biased, but I think Kyle and my range tests are really the best highway range tests that anybody does. We painstakingly try to eliminate as many things as we can. And so that each test is repeated and we can compare vehicle to vehicle. I did it with the Cadillac Lyric and it did fantastic. 70 miles an hour, went 330 miles. Their EPA combined range rating, this was a rear wheel drive Lyric with the 20-inch wheels. The combined EPA range rating is 312. So it outperformed its EPA range rating, which isn't completely unusual. We see that, you know, every now and then on vehicles, but it's very good. It did a great job. So I had a lot of my followers comment and say, 70 miles an hour is too slow. You know, I live out wherever and, you know, we drive 75, 80 miles an hour all the time. You know, I wish you would have done it at a faster speed. So I decided to do that. The problem is here in New Jersey, first of all, our speed limit is 65 miles an hour. And the problem is that roads are congested. You can blast away at 80 miles an hour at times for spurts. But in order for us to do this range test for 3 hours, I have to drive 80 miles an hour without slowing down at all. And that it's just impossible to do during the day. Right. So I set out and did this at midnight. I started the range test at midnight because the roads are mostly, you know, mostly clear. And I was able to do that. I was able to maintain it the whole time, didn't have to slow down at all. Repeated the test about 3 weeks after I did the first test. I rented this Lyric. There's a Lyric on Toro available here in New Jersey. It was like one of the first people to get one. And I repeated the test, rented it from it. It only had about 500 more miles on it. So we're talking same vehicle. The temperature was the same. The wind was the same. This was a perfect comparison test. Ran it at 80 miles an hour. Finished up with 245 miles, 85 miles less. 26% less range. I averaged 2.3 miles per kilowatt hour. And on the first range test, when I did 330 miles, I averaged 3.1 miles per kilowatt hour. So you could see significantly less, not surprising. You know, those of us that have been driving EVs for a long time understand that, you know, your range degrades exponentially. Once you get over about 60, 65 miles an hour, every mile an hour you add, you're losing range. And, you know, so I wanted to demonstrate just how much further you can go. Think about this. If you're on a long road trip, you know, let's say you're taking your Lyric and you're going to drive 1200 miles or so, you'd get there faster if you drove slower, because the amount of more energy you're going to consume at 80 miles an hour is going to cause you to stop at least once more. And the Lyric's not a charging beast, and you've got to pull off the highway and find the charger, hope that one's working, hope it's available, and plug in. So, you know, if you own a Lyric or any electric vehicle and you're on a road trip, really have to, and you're really concerned about getting there as fast as you can, you really have to balance, you know, your speed and time. Kyle's a genius at this with his cannibal runs. It's all about balancing how fast he goes with the consumption of the vehicle and how many times he's going to have to stop and when he has to plug in, you know. So, I mean, but most people don't drive that way. They don't, when you're going on a road trip, you don't obsess over shaving 3 minutes off of your trip. But still, the video demonstrated just how much more energy it needs to push that air out of the way by adding 10 miles an hour to your speed.
Right.
Fascinating results. Nothing, I would say, abnormal looking here. That seems about right. Yeah. But I did research the Drive Pilot. It's level 3, and it was only in Nevada until a couple months ago, and now it's California and Nevada. Okay. But it launched originally, at least for the first half of this year, was only Nevada. And I think only EQS with the LiDAR gets it, and S-Class as well.
Right. And only up to 45 miles an hour?
Is that 80 miles an hour.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, wait, sorry. Drive Pilot. Yeah. Up to speeds of 40 miles an hour. So why did I also
40 miles an hour? I'm not sure. Yeah. Cause when we drove it, they referred to it as like traffic jam pilot.
So, currently it's 40 miles an hour in their final iteration of SAE level 3 with the current platform. It will go up to 130 kmh or kph, which is 80 miles per hour.
Okay. I mean, that'd be great. I mean, that's full self-driving once they achieve it, because the manufacturer accepts responsibility for anything that goes wrong.
You really can't think of it that way. I mean, a very, very closed road area.
Right. It's true. Not true. Like everywhere in town, take me to the bar, take me here or there, only on mapped interstates or whatever for now.
Which is like kind of like what most systems do today. It just means you can look away a little bit longer. I don't think it'll be a night and day difference. And it's not only like, will the manufacturer accept responsibility? I've never tested this, but it's more like, do you feel safe? Because you also like don't want to crash and get hurt.
Sure. Right. And it takes a while for even like with a FSD, you know, to feel safe, to choose. I mean, it takes a while to adjust to the car doing that stuff for you. You know, even like just regular autopilot, I had a hard time. It took me almost 1,000 miles to kind of relax and chill and let regular autopilot do its thing, you know, because I take turns different, even on like a highway, I take turns differently than autopilot does. And
I let all my friends drive my Lightning with the Blue Cruise, hands-free Blue Cruise, and it totally freaks them out. They're like, I see them nervous and like with their hands ready to grab the steering wheel. And I'm like, put your hands on your legs and look forward and just let the thing go. And it's, if you're not, until you get used to it, it's, you know, disconcerting. It's really weird to have the vehicle steering on the highway and driving for you. So I understand what you're saying.
Right. All right. So we should talk about, I don't know, we want to talk about Rivian a little bit, or we want to talk about Mini Coopers, because Mini Cooper just, Mini Cooper and Mini Cooper Countryman EVs both just debuted this morning. Just to throw that out there. I don't know. You have a preference, Kyle?
Yeah, let's do Mini news. I'm a huge Mini enthusiast. Tom, we always talk about on the show, Tom had the original Mini Electric. I think I've owned six Minis. And the future of the brand was looking a little bit disappointing, maybe up until today. So this is all good news.
Right on. See if I can bring up some pictures of it. So see. So the base... So we're not getting the base Cooper. I mean, we're not getting the Cooper in the U.S., I don't believe, right? The electric Cooper? Yeah,
the hard top. Because the Cooper is a trim level. Okay. So the Mini hard top is the one you're thinking of. It's actually, it's the J01. It's the next F56 generation Mini. It's a, you know, the traditional two-door. I thought we were getting it to the U.S., although I could be wrong on that. Tom, do you know?
Oh, you muted. Mm-hmm.
I think for sure initially we're not, but I don't know the full details on whether it's going to come later on.
I think 2025, I think we're getting something, but the Countryman comes here right away. But this right now we're looking at pictures of the Mini Cooper, and I believe there's two trim. There's a Mini Cooper E and then a Mini Cooper SE. And they're a little bit different, if I can.
And there'll be a future JCW version with max power. So two battery sizes available on this one, 40 kilowatt hour and then 50 something, if I remember correctly. And I'm just going to pull up the details here, but yeah. Well over 200 miles of range, which is great. It'll have reduced 0-60 time in the Cooper S version over the current outgoing car, which only has like a 32, 33 kilowatt hour battery pack, so significantly bigger. So if you look at the current F56 generation car, this is a platform that was designed to handle gas, diesel, and then they adapted it for battery electric. This J01 platform is completely electric from the ground up. It's a brand new platform. And yep, so you'll have the E, the SE, and the JCW up to 250 horsepower, which is a lot for a small car. So that should be pretty spicy and tons of fun. They're range is going to be maybe 200 miles EPA, something like this.
Twice what the current one is.
I have those figures. So the range is 190 for the Cooper E and WLTP.
Those are just estimated, though.
Right, with a 40.7 kilowatt hour battery. Now, this is from the press
release. Yeah, but it says estimated, so we're not 100% sure how it'll come in.
Right, and the SE has a with a 54.2 kilowatt hour battery has a range estimated of 250 miles, which is decent.
They wouldn't give EPA unless they were thinking about bringing it to North America.
Right. Okay. Fast charging is a little bit different too. Fast charging is up to 75 kilowatts for the E and 95 kilowatt peak power for the SE, which is still not great. I don't know what's up with that charging speeds. Charge goes from 10 to 80 in 30 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Again, it's a city car. So like Tom drove the previous generation Mini from the electric Mini from North Carolina or from Jersey to North Carolina and back. And yeah, it only charged at 50 kilowatt peak, very similar to i3, but it just sat there to like 95% or something crazy. And that was livable. And I think for a small electric car, you know, not having 300 kilowatt charging is okay. I think this is something you're going to charge at home or your apartment most of the time and then do the occasional DC trip.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just surprised they didn't bump it up to like, say, 100 kilowatt, you know, like that would help the little short burst. If you just needed to add an extra 50 miles and, you know, it would give you a little bit more, but as Kyle said, hopefully you just plug in, you get the 75 kilowatt and it's just boom, the whole way, you know, and then that's livable. But it's surprising that they've been, put it to 100.
It is close to 100 kilowatts on the big battery, right, Dom?
It's close to 100 on the big battery coming back.
90 something. Yeah, oh, was it? I'm sorry, I missed that one.
95 kilowatts.
All right, then that's okay as far as I'm concerned. As long as it doesn't do, you know, Chevy Bolt. As long as it hits that 95 and just, you know, gives it to you at least till 70%, you know, hopefully right up to 80% before it starts tapering. And you know, there's no reason why in a 50 kilowatt hour battery pack, it can't hold 90 kilowatt all the way up to that. And if that's the case, it'll be just fine.
Yeah. And BMW's proven that they've never had these big peaks, but like i7 and, you know, iX, they all just kind of sit flat deep into the battery. So hopefully they take that same approach. What we're looking at now is not what we're talking about. This is the Countryman here.
I brought up the Countryman because we're not sure when the Cooper E is going to come here, or Cooper SE is going to come here, but the Countryman is coming here and I believe soon. So I don't have a ton of information on this, but the new Countryman is like 5.1 inches longer, 2.5 inches higher, with a wider wheel arches to accommodate wheels up 20 inches. Countryman E for electric, and so globally the Countryman lineup will be offered with two gas engines, a diesel, and two EVs with a 64.7 kilowatt hour battery. The base Countryman E has an output of 150 kilowatts or 204 horsepower, 183 pound-feet of torque, and 287 miles of WLTP range. Right. 287 miles of WLTP range, which sounds like 250 EPA. So, yeah. But what do you think of this, Kyle? You're a Mini enthusiast. Is this too far out there for the Mini crowd?
No. I've owned Countrymans before, actually, and I've done 100,000+ miles in them. And, you know, that was before I was into EVs. I was driving Minis around, like I mentioned. And I think my main concern with this is the price. I think it looks fantastic. I love the new circular UI situation. I think that's a great idea. This is a little bit disappointing because they built it on a platform that, you know, isn't battery electric from the ground up. So I hope the optimization is going to be okay. I do believe they will have a all-wheel drive version. Yeah, the Mini Countryman SE all four. So there will be one, and that's expected to be like 50,000 euros. And so that seems like quite expensive for a top trim. Like how could you go for this over a Model Y, basically?
This is a
tough sell.
The interior, I mean, this is really nice. I mean, I like the Model Y. I like the Tesla interior thing, but this is pretty special too. Some people, you know, I can see people really like glomming onto this, you know, really liking this interior.
Sure, until they have to go charge it at a non-Tesla supercharger, or they have to go somewhere and it only charges at 150 kilowatts instead of 250. You know, when you start thinking about the material usable differences between this and other cars, I just hope they've done their homework and this thing works really well. We'll have to test it because I think it looks great. It's the right size. It's not very mini. We've had that argument a long time ago when they launched this car. Everyone was upset. And guess what? Mini lovers drive them all the time. And, you know, I think they nailed it on the styling here. All around, it looks great. I just wonder, I could see it really popular here in the Munich area because there's a ton of Minis around because, of course, BMW Group headquarters are based here. So everyone's got Mini company cars. They're all ripping them around. These will be everywhere here. It makes sense. In the U.S., I wonder how well it'll do. We'll have to see.
Right. That's pretty interesting.
I like Greg Kramer's point here. I don't see this above the EX30. It would be pretty much a solid competitor for the Volvo EX30. True. The EX30 is going to cost less. You know, I know you're going to have your Mini enthusiasts that love everything Mini, and it'll appeal to them. But I'd be curious to see head to head. That'd be a super good comparison video for you in the future, Kyle. Mini Countryman, Volvo EX30 head to head. That would be really good. And by the way, full disclosure, I have an EX30 on order.
Yeah, same here.
Well, you guys have like every electric car on order, though, don't you?
Nope. Well, I'm not everyone.
I feel like the list of cars that you don't have on order is shorter than the list of cars that you do have on order, but I get it.
You don't have to take delivery of them. It's just good to reserve
true.
A spot.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. You're not buying, you don't have like a huge aircraft hangar to park, cars in.
It's not a bad idea. We did go by the local airport the other day to check them out though.
Oh yeah, the classic hut kind of idea.
Yeah, hangar.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. So yeah. All right. So
I have a big barn here now with the house I just bought next door.
That's so dangerous.
I can store 4 cars in there.
Oh yeah.
That gets dangerous real quick. Once you have space, then you start filling it up with stuff.
Right. All right. So Kyle, before you went to Europe, or actually this was the week before, you released a video about going to see Rivian and visiting there and trying out their new dual motor R1T, the pickup truck. And then you did, so you drove both. Actually, you drove at the Rivian factory, you drove the traditional 4 motor version, which is something that you own as well. And just compare the dynamics of that and how it works with the new 2 motor setup that the Rivian is producing with their own motors now, the original 4 motor, I believe the source motors from Bosch or something. So how do they compare?
I think it took me an hour and 15 minute long video to answer that question. And I only got through about half what I wanted to say. So I won't extend this podcast longer than necessary.
Sure.
But I think ultimately what people need to know is when Rivian launched, they launched with one configuration of the truck, which was a single battery pack, the middle size battery. They call it the large battery, and a 4 motor system, which is all the content, all the stuff, sort of maxed out. But they didn't really have the resources to engineer their own motor in-house. So they went to Bosch, bought the units from them, and then they did their own inverter on that 4 motor system. So some of it was Rivian focused. This new motor and architecture from Rivian, it's what's called a 3-in-1. It's motor, gearbox, and inverter, is done all in-house. Now, of course, they have to source some components outside, but the design, the spec, everything is done by them. So it's a Rivian motor built for the Rivian current products and the future products. So the effort that went into this motor isn't just as an option for R1, but it's also for their Amazon delivery van. It's also for R2 down the line and whatever else they haven't announced yet. And so basing your engineering and basing your cars on an in-house designed motor that you can optimize specifically for your current and future needs is a great starting point and a great thing to have in your back pocket versus a lot of other automakers who have to go to suppliers and get their motors from them, which isn't bad, but great to have your own in-house technology. What else should I say about it? Comparing it, there'll be 3 different motors available now. There'll be a standard dual motor, a performance dual motor, and then the top trim quad motor. So they're still positioning the quad motor as the top drivetrain. It's what Tom has in his R1S. It's what I have in my R1T. And it's a great drivetrain system. However, there's some thermal issues. There's some NVH issues as well. Half shafts clicking. Motors are quite loud. And then there's also some power torque transfer issues where basically it can't send torque beyond what one motor can do. So if you're stuck and only one wheel has traction, even though it's 4 motors, sometimes that one motor with traction isn't enough to move the whole truck up and over what you're trying to do. So I have some issues with the 4 motor system, most of which were fixed with the introduction of this dual motor system, which is positioned lower down in the lineup, less impressive, but it's quieter. Speed wise, sure, it rips. I drove the performance one 3.5 second 0-60. It boogies. Rivian actually limits the acceleration of their truck based off of ride height and drive mode. So if you put both trucks in all purpose, which I haven't tried, I want to, I bet they're about the same power you get on a daily basis. So I don't think in daily driving, you're giving up any power. And, you're going from like something like 700 horsepower, roughly 650, somewhere around there, to 835 for the quad motor. So the quad motor on paper has a lot more power. But to me, it's not worth the difference in acceleration because I don't think people are really drag racing these things. What else should I say about it? Yeah, I mean, it's still, it's got a clutch disconnect on the rear. I did a whole deep dive into that in this video. You can talk about that. There's no locking diffs, which I think is really a shame. And it's a missed opportunity. I think they wanted to keep the dual motor system less impressive than the quad motor system, but it would have been such a cheap, inexpensive, simple activation, situation to put in just the rear motor, a locker, and it could have just, you know, it would have been the better off-road drivetrain at that point than the quad motor system. And they purposefully, my impression, didn't do this to keep the quad motor top, but I still feel like they're holding back a little bit of capability with this.
Right. So, for people who don't understand the whole locking situation. So generally when you're driving the truck the way it is now, if three wheels can't get traction, there's only one wheel. It can't transfer the torque over to the other side, but if it's locked, the wheels turn regardless. You know, they're just turning. So if there's one that has traction, it'll pull you out. And it seems like a big miss.
Well, they do it electronically with brakes, so there is torque transfer through ABS. And so if a wheel is spinning, they'll honk down on the brake on that side.
But you got stuck.
Yeah, I'll get to that in just a second.
Okay. So
under normal driving situations, I had a situation where I had the front left and the back right wheel completely in the air, teeter-tottering. And we weren't trying to raise elevation. We were just driving along. And in that case, like almost every car on the market today, the wheels that are spinning, ABS grabbed those brakes, which sent the power to the wheels with traction, and we moved along just fine. A little bit of noise from the ABS pump, and we were on our way. And that is totally fine, for like 99% of use cases. And it can actually transfer quite a bit of torque until it maxes out the capability of that system, which is really only as hard as they're willing to let that brake caliper clamp down. And certainly not hard enough, because I was wide open throttle and we were actually spinning all four tires, in a sense, or I should say three tires, one that wasn't really moving. So they definitely need to increase the clamping force to simulate a locking differential better in an extreme situation.
Right. So you also talked about the max pack, the big battery pack a bit on this. Somebody's asking, any news, the Pop PV asks, any news on the kilowatt hour capacity of the max pack?
Yeah, I think we know everything about max pack now. So there's three battery packs available in the truck. There's a standard LFP battery pack that's actually in every Rivian Amazon van right now. Every Rivian van since January is LFP with just the front Enduro drive unit, this new drive unit. So they've been testing that battery, cycling them, doing everything. That's pretty cool. And they can also full charge them every day, of course, because it's LFP is how they're using them. Then there's the large battery pack. We don't know the kilowatt hour capacity on the LFP. The large battery pack is roughly, maybe 140 kilowatt hours gross, plus or minus, and close to high 120s usable. And then the big battery pack, the max pack, is completely unchanged from the standard battery pack in terms of architecture, packaging, cooling. It is just a cell chemistry change. And I think this was the most disappointing thing to me about max pack, actually, is there's room to expand the battery pack. There was an opportunity to up the voltage of the truck and to make it more usable and more useful. And they decided to go the cheap route, which, you know, I'm not a company analyst from a cost perspective. Maybe it's the only way Rivian can survive is to not spend huge R&D money right now, but still offer max pack. They're offering what they promised. It goes 410 miles EPA R1T on the aero wheels with max pack. It's huge range. They've been able to eke a lot out with this new chemistry change. And so I think, I think it's the right decision. Maybe company financially. I don't review companies. I review cars. And I thought, maybe it's only an extra 30 kilowatt hours usable over the current one, something like that. 155, 160 usable is what we're thinking. Maybe 180 gross.
Okay. Sounds reasonable.
Not for 10 grand.
Oh, well, yeah, no, maybe not for 10 grand. 10 grand. Yeah.
Yeah. If you go to the configurator, I think it's $16,000 from the base truck to upgrade to the max pack. And weirdly, you can't get the quad motor max pack which makes no sense because it's the same architecture. Like the battery's not physically different in terms of packaging. So why not let me get the Max Max. So yeah, lots of questions. Rivian kind of skirted a lot of those things. I also didn't really focus in on a lot. I was there to review the dual motor. But I'm just slightly confused as to some of these decisions here.
Right. Well, maybe we should see if RJ wants to come on and explain it to us sometime.
Yeah, or someone else from Rivian. Yeah,
or we could someone have, else yeah, from maybe Rivian. Someone I mean, from the marketing team. I just love to talk to RJ. He seems like a pretty together CEO. You got great. To talk to him this
Yeah, time? spent quite a bit of time with him this week. He's really just awesome for having to be well versed in so many areas of his business. We were able to dive into some fairly deep topics, very different from each other, and he was right with it and fully understood it. And I'm lucky enough where I get to talk to a lot of automaker CEOs just at events and things that I go to, and very few of them completely understand their business like my impression of RJ understanding Rivian.
Right.
I think only the startup CEOs are capable of that, Kyle. The legacy brands, for the most part, the CEOs, I've in many instances come from being like a CEO from another company that wasn't even in the automobile industry, and that they're just, high level company managers. But with the startups, you look at Elon, you look at RJ and even Rawlinson, these guys understand everything about their vehicles. And, I think we only get that with the startups.
Right.
Yeah, it was actually fascinating because I was with Peter Rawlinson and RJ back to back one day after each other, and really a great time. Both of them fantastic individuals, and had a good time with both of them nerding out about stuff.
Yeah, we talked about your Lucid trip last week. So if you're curious about how that went, you can check out last week's episode for that. So any questions you have about the dual motor system, Tom? You're a former Rivian truck owner.
Former.
Yeah, he's got one now. Pickup
truck. I have the R1S now.
You have the R. Oh, right.
Come on, know that.
That's true. That's true. I was thinking pickup truck.
I had the R1T and I sold it, and I have the R1S now. I'm perfectly content with the quad motor. The interesting thing is, if I had the option, would I have taken the dual motor? I would have had to think long and hard about that, because this is a substantial savings. And, there's this is a higher performance, the quad motors. I don't know. I don't know what I would have done if it were. You,
the dual motor would have been perfect for what
probably,
you need. More range, more efficiency.
You're probably right, but I still don't know if I would have said, give me the extra horsepower, because I just want to, I want to throw everybody in the back seat when I stomp on it, I'm sure the dual motor has a tremendous amount of power too, but the quad motor Rivians are just nuts. I mean, my R1S is just, it's crazy how
do you drive it in lowest suspension very much?
Only one, not normal driving. Normal driving, they're just a regular suspension, but there's frequently when I go out, particularly, like I said, when I want to, impress people, of course I drop it down and thrash it around a little bit. I'm trying to set up bringing it to a local track and do some quarter mile runs and surprise some people. Well, that's probably not too much of a surprise anymore. Most people know what it is. But still, seeing this SUV roll up next to you in your, modified 69 Mustang that you've spent the last 10 years of your life, trying to squeeze out as much horsepower as you can. And this guy rolls up with a child seat in the back and an SUV and just toasts you. It's got to be demoralizing.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, I think for 99% of people, my recommendation is go dual motor because under normal driving, I think they're pretty much identical accelerations unless you drop the trucks to lowest suspension. There's no half shaft wobble or they at least claim they've taken care of the half shaft situation. It's more efficient. It's all done in-house, fully integrated. And I think more predictable off-road, like unless you're doing there's certain scenarios where the four motor system certainly is going to be better. They can do, torque vectoring where they can overdrive the outside tire. They can't do that with the dual motor. But those situations are so slim in the amount of use case, it's not worth the extra money. Now, there has been a new topic, and we're going to do a whole podcast on this on the out of spec side, of if you have a current pre-order reservation, It's $500 less to get the dual motor. I think if it's that close, just get the quad, because I think it's going to hold its value better. And, you know, it's always going to be the top option. It's just a cool thing, and experience it, because it is a unique drivetrain to get the four motor system. But if it's a $3,000 spread, then I think you just get the dual motor. It's a better system for daily driving. You get more efficiency, more range, less noise, less clunking. The dual motor is fundamentally better for most use cases.
But then, Kyle, there's the other thing that, and you might not agree with me on that, but I'm not 100% sold that this is, you know, going to be as reliable, say, as a Bosch motor throughout the years, where this is their first iteration of making their own motor. They don't have years of experience. I know that you said that, you know, it's in the Amazon trucks, which is a great way to really test them. But who knows, 2-3 years down the road, you know, it's a new car. They're still a new car company. This is the first motor they designed in-house. You know, putting that up against, say, a Bosch motor who's been making motors forever, you know, maybe that's something that people want to consider, at least. You know, it's something to consider.
And you get less warranty on the Rivian motor, which doesn't lead to higher confidence. It's something I didn't put in the video, but really wanted to.
Yeah, that's good. That's worth mentioning. We'll have
to follow up on it. Yeah, because it's like 4 years instead of 5 years or something like this.
They should go all out with that. Man.
That's what I always talk about when I do my charger reviews, is first thing to look at is the warranty, because that tells you the confidence that the company has in their product. And, if you're offering this truck with an X warranty and this truck with X minus two warranty, there's a reason why they're doing that. They didn't just arbitrarily pluck a number out of the sky. So, you know, it's something to consider is all I'm saying. Yeah, I wouldn't say don't buy one. I would just say it's something to consider.
Yeah. But also, like, the Bosch motor is not the best. I think we can all agree. It's clunky. It's noisy. Like, I always complain. Like, I love my truck, and the first complaint is I don't like the drivetrain that much. So this, like, kind of solves a lot of that stuff. Right, honestly, like, the warranty stuff wouldn't bother me. I would go for it. If it's going to break, it's going to break in, you know, the first, you know, few thousand miles, not. It would be my impression of how electric motors typically fail. Right. You know, over time, there could be some things like early Model S drive units had the coolant water jacket situation. Every design, there's always going to be some flaw that will come out, but certainly worth considering.
So I thought the Bosch motors, I mean, Bosch has a lot of experience in making motors and things, but it's not super great though. Like you said, though, it's glycol cooled in the jacket around the motor, I believe. Whereas the new design, Rivian does it right. They've got oil cooling. They got the oil splashing all through to the stator all around. I mean, it's really, I believe they were doing with this electric motorcycle, motors, like the oil injection, like years ago. It just makes more sense for thermals. They just keep everything under control.
Yeah, my understanding is a lot of the Rivian motor team came from GM, like the Bolt motor days, stuff like that. And those are fairly reliable. I don't know how many of them or who or anything like that, but I think most of them have been in the industry.
Right.
And it may prove to be even more reliable and last longer than the Bosch motors. I'm just bringing it up as a point to consider, because it is their first motor. They're just launching it. There's not a lot of track record, and it's something to consider.
That's a fair point, I think. So, Kyle, I want to talk about this little video you made the other day, just really quick. So, was it yesterday, the day before, Tesla made all the superchargers in Europe or just Germany free? So,
yep, all of Europe.
So you had this bright idea to go check out how that was working out at as many different supercharger locations as possible. I didn't watch the whole video, so I'm not sure how many you managed to hit, but I just thought that was great. Can you tell us, like, if it was bad or good, or just people should go watch the videos and check it out, because it's an enjoyable watch.
And it's actually been interesting reading the comments on that after it's gone live, because a lot of other Europeans went out and did a similar thing and, you know, went charging to get the free juice. And there's no question that the traffic was significantly higher than average. Right. And there's two reasons, I think. The first is you incentivized people who were already traveling to just use the supercharger network, because it costs nothing to travel on that day. So that drew, you know, some of the drivers away from the other public networks and brought them to Tesla. And I think a lot of people went out to go get their free juice just because why not? It was free. And I think that's the thing. Now, I thought it was really an interesting experiment. We went to this one that you're seeing on the screen now, if you're watching on YouTube or Twitter. This station is the downtown Berlin station, you know, 20 stalls right in the heart of Berlin. And it was empty. No one was there. I mean, there was like four cars out of 20. It was crazy. So we were like, oh, well, maybe this isn't like going to be a good video. I don't know. And it was fascinating because all of the other chargers that we went to on the outskirts of the city and along the highways were jamming. They were full. The only one that started to open up was right close to midnight. We went to the last charger and it was opened up. But yeah, it was pretty fascinating. We talked a lot about the main purpose of the video was actually to see like charge port location. Does it have as big of an effect on, the traffic flow at a supercharger?
Okay.
The answer is yes. That's what I really wanted to see. The free charging thing, I didn't really care too much about that. I knew more people would go and charge. Right. But it was more like, well, now it's free for Tesla and non-Tesla. So I was hoping to see a bunch more non-Teslas there. And there were.
Okay. And they were they messing up the way they, you know, because like this ID3 is the charge port is on the rear of the passenger side, which is the opposite side of a Tesla, say. So did it mess up how like the parking situation, making some stalls unavailable?
Totally. And it was actually interesting. There was a station that was pretty much exactly half full. But because every Tesla owner left a perfect space between them, I could not plug in the ID3 anywhere because you need two open spaces next to each other. You need a non-Tesla in the spot that you're not going to use, and you need the space that you're parking to be completely open. And so it shifts everyone the wrong way. There were some sites that had an additional space on the other side of a supercharger all the way on the end. That I was able to use at one particular location. But then, you know, I was pulling out and a Model 3 was backing into this spot thinking they could charge there, but there was no charger on where their charge port was. So it definitely added some confusion, some convolutedness. Now, version 4 charging is going to be centrally mounted posts in general. Each site design is going to be different, but they're also going to be longer cables, and that's going to help a ton. But I'm not convinced they're long enough. And that brings up more of a question as to what this whole video was about, which is it the automaker's responsibility to standardize charge port location to blend with Tesla? Or is it Tesla's responsibility as a charge point operator to charge all vehicles? And I think that's a question that hasn't totally been answered yet. But I don't think standardized charge port location will ever happen personally. And right. So I think it's up to Tesla as a charge point operator to whatever their mission is, advance electric mobility, basically allow the longer cables so you can have different sites charge different vehicles.
Maybe let me part where I think, well, the version 4 superchargers that are starting to roll out now in Europe have longer cords, yes?
The version 4 has longer cords. Yeah, I went to one. Right. I went to the Giga Berlin version 4, but it was all closed. So we're going to take a road trip, I think, to the Netherlands. There's some. So we'll head over there sometime before we leave back to the US and film a video at there. But it's not going to be that interesting because they're still hooked up to version 3 chargers. So there's no difference in charging power.
Right, right.
When I spoke to Jeff Bino of Ford's public charging manager, I asked him that specific question. Are you going to start locating your charge ports in the back to accommodate? He didn't come out and have a clear like yes or no. But what he did say was, well, we've worked with Tesla to provide longer cables. So to me, that seemed to be an answer. No, we're not going to start putting all of our charge ports in the rear of the vehicle. I think that's pretty much, as Kyle said, you're not going to get all the OEMs to do a standardized charge port location. Just like you're not going to get the OEMs to have a standard battery size so that they can do battery swapping with removable packs. All these companies don't want to have any outside influence over how they engineer their vehicles, even to the point of a charge port location. So that's not going to happen. I don't believe it will, at least.
Right. Merci Bautista mentions, who here remembers that the location to fill the gas tank was behind the license plate? I remember this.
It was on a spring. Pull it down.
We had my dad was a taxi driver. So we had like a fleet of Plymouth Furies, mid-70s Plymouth Furies, basically. And they get the gas tank was behind the license plate. It was kind of neat. I can see manufacturers kind of not being forced to put their charging ports in the same place, but just if Tesla charging really becomes ubiquitous, like a monopoly, it would just make sense then to put them on more closer to the corners of the car, left or right, or front or back. It doesn't really matter. Just closer, not behind the front wheel. This is the weirdest location I find for me. And GM has a lot of charging locations. I mean, a lot of manufacturers put charging ports there on the front driver's fender behind the wheel well, when it should be like on the front or in front of the wheel, on the wheel well, or on the nose. Or I love the way Tesla does it, really, in the back tail light, assembly just flips up. It's really wonderful because
you have a bike rack or you're towing.
Oh, really?
The back charge port, you mean?
Right. It gets in the way with the bike rack.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You see how many superchargers are pushed over? You ever notice that?
No.
Yeah, just go to like any station and you'll see them like bent back a little bit. I've seen people with bike racks smash into these things. So, Tesla owners aren't always the best drivers out there. Sure. Because I think they always rely on their cars to drive themselves. Anyway, the supercharging experience, the experiment was fascinating. Truly a great time going over. We learned a lot, and I think Tesla probably got a lot of good data as well. But one thing is for sure, the superchargers work great here in Europe. Other chargers also work very well. So there's much more competition for charging in this market than just relying on Tesla.
True. Hey, and before you went to Europe, you went to Overland Expo, I believe, in Loveland, Colorado, just down the road from you. And I didn't think you were going to make it to this thing, but you did. And you got to see this crazy thing. I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on this. You have a great video here, and you talk to the people that take you on inside, a total tour. So people should definitely go and check that out. But just how crazy, like an Overland Hummer EV, fully integrated. They work together. Who's the manufacturer of this? Earth Cruiser. It was something like that. So it was quite an interesting package overall. You didn't pre-order this, did you?
No.
Okay.
I only have one car on pre-order that I can think of, and it's just the EX30. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know what else is out there.
This is
you didn't reserve a Cybertruck?
No.
What?
Yeah.
A lot of Cybertruck news, a lot of buzz on Cybertruck. This people are just like foaming at the mouth waiting for this thing to come out.
I mean, Cybertruck. I'm thinking myself that I didn't reserve one. It's YouTube gold. When the Cybertruck initially launched, I was there at the launch event. I didn't think it was ever going to be that, possible that I could just, let's just get one to make some videos with and then sell it. But, so it wasn't part of the plan back then.
Yeah, I think I forget what I have reservations for. The EX30, a Cybertruck, a Canoe pickup truck, Silverado EV. I think that might be it. So only four.
Hey, real quick, Real EV in the comments is talking about Electrify America updates. You hinted at that last week. There was something they were doing, maybe rolling out some software possibly to update their system. Signet Surge, if that's been taken care of or anything like that?
Oh, I haven't heard any updates at all from anyone on that.
Okay. I just thought I'd throw that out there just in case. All right. So, this week we've talked about what you guys.
But it's also not like we're in the U.S. anymore to test it. So, we need to see multiple charging sessions across multiple cars, particularly with Lucids, at as many Signet stations as we can. Ryan's keeping an eye on it on Rate Your Charge. So we have a tag. Anytime someone checks in with a high voltage car on a Signet, we're looking for more Signet Surge stuff. So, yeah.
Okay.
We're trying to keep track of it, but it sounds like we're on the upswing of that situation.
Sweet. All right. So, Tom, don't you have a Ram on order too?
Yes, I do, Pete. I forgot that one.
All right.
Before we go, Dom, I don't know if we're going to be cut now because it's getting towards the end. Well, sure. I thought I'd do a close-up of the Magic Dock Tesla universal wall connector, because I know people have asked me about that. As you know, I did the videos. We talked about it the last couple of weeks. This adapter will not unlock while it's in this position, just like the supercharger at Magic Dock. It's interesting how it works. It must be magnetic or something on the inside, because when this is docked in the charger, if I just pull, the Tesla connector will release. But then once I press this tab and remove it from the body of the unit, now it becomes tethered so nobody can steal it. So it's definitely interesting. And I'm amazed. I have two videos out on this. I've already started to do my complete review. It's going to take me a few weeks to do that. But I'm amazed there's still no video of anybody that has one on this online. So I may be the only person that Tesla sent this to, which is pretty cool. Or at least,
yeah, I think you were, because who else reviews level two chargers? You're the only one.
So it's pretty cool. I'm doing the full review. I like it. It seems this will be a good solution for a lot of people. And a lot of people have been asking me, what's the big deal? Why don't you just get Tesla regular wall connector with an adapter? And you're right. It's not that big of a difference, but it is a much more elegant solution. You don't have to worry about storing your adapter, losing your adapter, and this is designed to work seamlessly with this. So it's a really good solution. And when Tesla rolls out their new app, because that's what they also told me, that it's not just this, that it's they're doing a major update to their app. So they're going to have a lot of app functionality for people that have this and the regular wall connector. And that was supposed to happen like within weeks of releasing this. So any day now we should get this app update. And as soon as that happens, I'll download it and we'll see what the functionality of this was. But I've used it so far to charge all my EVs, the Bolt, the Rivian, the Lightning, and works perfectly as you would expect, but you still want to test it to check it out. But really cool unit.
All right. Hey, so this week, I just want to talk about my own car situation for a second. I put up a video myself of just going to talking about the PCS issue with a used Tesla Model 3. So I bought a used Tesla Model 3 earlier this year, and it has this issue. I had a little warning pop up on the dash that I did not notice at the time, power grid or vehicle issue limiting AC charging. And it turns out that the power conversion system, or PCS, which sits on the battery in the back, was failing. And I did not know. I didn't realize it until I got home. So I just made a video explaining how you take this message and how you figure out if it's like the source of your electricity that's affecting, that's giving you this warning message, or if it's the actual issue with the car, and all the steps of how you go about, confirming that is the issue, and then what your options are to take care of it, which are, pretty slim, actually. There are some used, you could buy like a scrap or salvage module and have a garage put it in there for you. But the price was that I got so far was like pretty close to what Tesla charges for a brand new unit. So that would be my choice of what to go. But anyway, if you're interested in that, you can go to Drive Electric with Dominic and check that out.
Well, when you first picked up your car, you made a video about it. Right. And I noticed the messages on there and I was like, what does that say? And yeah, I guess you didn't realize till you got it back home to Tallahassee, and you.
Right. So that's like,
here we go. That's the video.
Right. I started off this video with that little clip, and I mentioned that you caught the message, warning messages, and I showed like the original clip where it'll change right over there now. So I'm looking at the dash, looking at the, it's been charging. But you're
limited to 16 amps everywhere, right?
This little message popped up. There was another message on there earlier warning about not being able to charge at superchargers until the ownership situation was switched over and everything. But so I didn't see it switch over. Anyway, I'm still charging on 16 amps now, so I can charge at 3 kilowatts. And
I really wish you would have made note of that at the dealership when you bought it, because you could have had them put something in the sales contract to say that this is, I'm taking possession of the vehicle, but there's obviously a fault. Right. The dealer's responsible for that. I mean, that would have been a point of negotiation for you at the time. And you might have got them to say, okay, check it out. And if it's a problem, we'll pay for it. You know, you always, right. you know, on used cars, if there's any of the warning lights or anything are lit when you buy a used car, and quite often the dealer, and in some states, I think it's almost law that like they can't sell it to you if there's some sort of if they're a licensed dealer reselling cars, they have to fix things like that. So they're responsible. So just a point for you guys out there, if you do buy any EV or any vehicle and there's some sort of a warning light, make note of it in the sales contract and try to get the seller to agree to have that rectified, or at least split the cost with you or something like that, you know, because it could end up being something very expensive, like what happened with Dom here, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, but it's about, I think it's like $1,700 or $1,800. I've seen different prices, like $1,700 or $1,800, but then add tax and then time of your day, it's a $2,000 issue, basically, I think. I think it's pretty fair to say that.
Yeah, and honestly, for your needs, it's not worth replacing until it stops AC charging.
Yeah,
because definitely. You can still supercharge at full speed.
Yes, and I don't have $2,000 sitting around that I can spend on this right now. So keep working, please, car. All right.
So, Dom, well, I wanted to touch on Mark's comment here, because it was kind of a – John Volker did a really good piece on talking about the OEMs. He did a bunch of interviews talking about their transition. And yeah, sorry, Mark, we should have taken a minute just to talk about this. John's an outstanding journalist. We will. I'll if he'll come on, I'll talk to him about that. I'm really good friends with John. I've been to his house a couple times. I've known John, you know, from the days when I first started covering EVs. He was a bit of a mentor of mine, and we got to be friends back then. And I used to write for Green Car Reports, where he was like the managing editor. He used to take my articles and then say, "Do you mind if I tweak them a bit?" And he would make them so much more polished and so much better, and send it back to me. He'd be like, "Is it okay if I polish this?" And I'm like, "Hell yeah! Like, do I owe you anything for making my article better?" But he taught me so much about how to write and all that stuff. And you know, he's a wonderful journalist. And if John writes something, you can etch it in stone, because he won't speculate. He gets double and triple confirmation. He won't write an article on what one inside person says if he can't, you know, get a second person to say that's correct. He won't cover it. He's aces, John. In my opinion, he's the best electric vehicle journalist out there today. Anyway, so he did this article and we didn't cover it. And Mark, honestly, I almost think that that's a topic that people maybe. Because I'm an insider, I'm looking through it through my tainted glasses. I almost think people would expect that, because this was an enormous decision that these automakers made to transition to NACS. It's going to cost them a ton of money, and they wouldn't do it unless they were disgusted with the state of current CCS charging. They held off and held off and held off. They did not want to transition to NACS. It's an enormous transition. Their engineers are probably pulling their hair out of their head now, re-engineering the cars. And it's not just a simple thing. So just put the NACS port in there. No, this is a tremendous amount of work and money it's going to cost the OEMs to do this. And they only did it because they felt they absolutely had to, because they were disgusted at the current state of CCS charging in the country. So I almost felt like, you know, it wasn't a surprise, but I guess I'm looking at it through my eyes, and I know that they're all disgusted, but the average person doesn't. So we should have brought that up, but thanks for pointing that out in the comment section.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's I need to look up that. I think it's four articles. It's a four-part series, and I need to look and read that up. And just to echo your comments about John, yeah, he's like top guy. Basically, there's so much attention to detail. He's like fastidious about the facts, basically.
And he will not print something that he can't double confirm. He is right. Aces.
Hey, there's just one little thing I want to share with you guys too that's coming out that just was announced this week. So this is a car that's going to be available in combustion versions, but also there's going to be an EV version. It's probably already sold. I think they're all sold anyway. So this is just a beautiful looking car, and it's going to have the same the electric version will have the same drivetrain, I believe, as the Maserati Folgore that you looked at last week, I believe we talked about, Kyle. Yeah, so this is the the Alfa Romeo 33 Stradale, and yeah, it just looks so amazing. I just had to share that as all. I just, it's such a great looking vehicle. Anyway, and but there's, yeah, only 33 of them made. They're also, someone's going to have some cool electric Alfa Romeo Stradale. To, you know, hopefully, Kyle, maybe, I don't know, you can hook up with one of those at some point in the future, because I'd like to see it, you know, tested properly. All right. So I think that brings us to the end of our show. Any other
news? I have to go pick up a Microlino.
Oh, do you? Oh,
oh, cool. So
if anyone doesn't know, so make, tell people what the Microlino is.
It's like a refreshed BMW iSetta. That is just the coolest little thing ever. They just emailed me like 5 minutes ago. They said, oh, go pick it up. You can have it for the week. They just ran. They said, you're in Munich. Go grab one. I'm like, hell yeah. So,
it's like an egg. Are you sure you're going to fit in that, Kyle? You're a big guy.
Hey, don't worry about it. You know,
I sat in one at an auto show once. It was so cool.
I'll make myself fit in there. I mean, I got a smart car. It can't be that much smaller than the smart.
Yeah, it's a lot smaller than your smart car.
I've sat in it.
It's
I've
like an it egg on wheels, Kyle.
Yeah. No, I've sat in it before. Yeah, we want to avoid any front end impacts while we have this, because there's no crumple zone. But
your legs are the crumple zone. So
this is apparently, because we have some other test cars. We have Neo coming with some battery swap stuff. Lucid Air. I'm trying to think what else we have going on. I'm going to drive a BYD for the first time this trip.
Oh, sweet. But,
We're actually like working on a deal with Sixt. And so it's not totally finalized yet, but they were like, just take a car for, you know, a review. And I was mm-hmm. like, okay, that sounds great. What do you have? BYD. Hell yes. I want to try that. Neo? So I don't know how long we'll have it. Neo, we're taking one from Neo. I want to do, we have an EV6 GT. I want to do EV6 GT versus Neo, like a high-speed road trip race at night around Germany, because battery swap versus really fast charging, basically, okay. would be the Sweet. Idea. Yeah. Right on. And I need to try an MG4 at some point. I've been seeing those, especially in northern Germany quite often, none here in southern Germany I've seen so far.
Right. Yeah, MG's got some interesting stuff going on. Actually, that's Cyberster. They have that little convertible, two-door convertible sports car, I think, coming out too. That's pretty cool looking.
Yeah, my friend Chris Rifa is going to come down. We're going to film some videos together. He's a Norwegian YouTuber, great electric vehicle journalist as well. I'm trying to think what else we have going on. Just so much, so many new cars. I have a list of like 12 or 13 cars that we're going to produce full videos on. I'm going to drive the Neo ET5 Touring, the wagon version, going on the launch of that next week. There's ID4 facelift, ID7. We're going to do BMW i5. I mean, it's just so many things. I mean, and I'm really bad at coordinating stuff, so I might miss some of those, but we'll do our best.
Okay, so we'll hear all about it next week.
Yeah, I guess MG is very popular, so I need to track one of those down.
Yeah, Martin owns one, so.
Oh, well, I'll just pop over and see him.
That'd be great. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, sure.
Don, before we cut out, I want to thank the followers. We posted this on our social accounts, but the Batteries Included podcast was number one downloaded, or the number one automotive podcast on Apple Podcasts for a good period of time, which is tremendous, and that speaks to you guys, not us. You thank you so much for helping us out in this transition from Inside EVs to our own podcast that we own, that we can control. We could bring new things, which we have a lot of plans in the future. But you guys really came through for us, and people are downloading and subscribing. And that's really important for us. We'll be here to continue to provide our insight and thoughts in the industry as long as you guys keep subbing and subscribing and show support. And I want to thank you all for making this podcast the number one automotive podcast on Apple Podcasts. Thank you.
That's pretty crazy. It's hard to even imagine that. That's a thing, really. It's been a crazy ride this past few years. And episode one, we're going to keep on driving in the future. But for now, I think that brings us to the end of this show. So if you have any questions or comments, please leave us a comment below, or get in touch with us on Twitter, where we are Batteries Inc. Pod, or on Threads, where we are at Batteries Included Podcast. You can follow Martin on Twitter or Threads at EV News Daily. On Twitter, Tom is Tomalog, that's with two M's, and Tomalogny on Threads. I'm Dominic Yoni on Threads, and in real life on Twitter, Kyle is Kyle Connor.
That's actually really a good, that was a good line. That was good.
Thank you. And he's virtual Kyle on Threads, but he's mostly on Twitter. If you want to find Kyle, he's on Twitter. Or
yeah,
X.
I use Twitter. I think the Threads thing kind of died out. Let me know if it starts to pick up again.
It's going pretty decent over there, actually. Yeah. It had slacked off, but now people can access it on their desktops now, so it's picked up a bit more. Okay. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining us once again. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you all again very soon. Ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.